darf es etwas mehr Blick sein. Für dich und alle Freunde. Und eine eigene Strandvilla.
Jetzt im Euro-Jackpot. Rund 40 Millionen Euro. Das Leben könnte so Jackpot sein. Mit Euro-Jackpot. In jeder Lotto-Annahmestelle und auf lottobayern.de. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Chance auf den Höchstgewinn 1 zu 140 Millionen. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
Darf es etwas mehr Blick sein? Für dich und alle Freunde. Und eine eigene Strandvilla.
Jetzt im Euro-Jackpot. Rund 40 Millionen Euro. Das Leben könnte so Jackpot sein. Mit Euro-Jackpot. In jeder Lotto-Annahmestelle und auf lottobayern.de. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Chance auf den Höchstgewinn 1 zu 140 Millionen. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
My grandfather, Eric Burgost, never talked about World War II. I could tell just by looking at him that he was still haunted by the memories. It pains me to say, however, my grandfather was a German soldier during the war, but was drafted and didn't choose the fight. I initially thought this fact alone was why he never talked about the war, but I was wrong. After he passed, I helped my mother clean out his house. While going through some of his belongings, I discovered an old journal my grandfather kept, which contained an unpublished memoir recounting his wartime experiences. While he didn't commit any atrocities, at least according to his memoir, my grandfather encountered something just as sinister. I've translated a section describing this very incident, one I know stuck with him the rest of his life. He titled this section, Das Armband, the bracelet. He probably never wanted his account told, but I feel my grandfather's World War II story is one that needs to be shared. Das Armband. The year I spent fighting to aid the Wehrmacht's eastern expansion exposed me to some of the worst carnage I ever witnessed. That's why I was elated when my infantry regiment was transferred to Norlage, a village in northern France. Save the ever-constant threats from local resistance groups and RAF raids, the quiet scenic countryside was a welcome change. The townspeople, although naturally resentful towards us, seemed to know their place and were seldom unruly. What mattered most to the peasants is exactly what did before our valiant conquest, making a living. Something that must go on for these people, war or no war. Our district's commanding officers suspected certain businesses and residences in Norlage were secretly being used as safe houses and outposts. One particular establishment, the Taverne Cotter, a popular spot among both the townspeople and troops. I and some of my fellow soldiers were regulars at the tavern and became acquainted with the owners, Jean and Elise Niveau. Madame Elise was warm and personable, who took time to learn everyone's name that stepped into a tavern and always made you feel welcome. She was scorned by some locals for doing so, but Madame Elise acted very motherly towards the younger German soldiers. We think it's because she knew we weren't here by choice, or was trying to have us let our guards down. Despite ultimately being a conquered peasant, she was on good terms with us, but knew our sentiments could shift instantly. Monsieur Jean, on the other hand, was a sad, cold, and unfriendly human being. He spent most of his time behind the bar or one of the back rooms, rarely interacting with customers, and treated his wife like a dog. I remember seeing the pain and sorrow in Madame Elise's eyes some days as she fought to keep a smile across her face. I was at the tavern with my regular band of soldiers, Privates Birch, Schultz, and Lance Corporal Welch. We were seated at our usual table, nestled in one of the tavern's corners, while waiting for Sergeant Jaeger, who wanted to share some news with us away from the barracks. Jaeger arrived shortly after we were seated and was quickly greeted by Madame Elise. After she departed, Jaeger motioned for us to lean in closer so nobody else could hear him speak. One of Jaeger's contacts claimed that Niveau's was hiding a priceless gold diamond-encrusted bracelet, purportedly dating back to the Capetian dynasty. "For what purpose are they storing it?" Schultz asked. "A post-war nest egg, funds for the resistance. It doesn't matter," Jaeger replied. They're sitting on a fast fortune that's ripe for the taking, and I say we make that taking ours. We were interrupted by Fiona, one of the tavern's waitresses, who brought us our round of drinks and made some coy small talk with our table. She was hard to miss with a slim proportionate figure, long curly black hair, luscious red lips, and radiant light green eyes. Fiona was always the most attractive and desirable woman in the tavern, but there was something about her I honestly detested. I learned she took men to a room upstairs for the right price and was having an affair with Monsieur Jean. Her immorality aside, I could never adequately identify what specifically incited my resentment. And if your source is incorrect? I asked after Fiona parted from our table, my eyes narrowing at Jaeger. When have my contacts misinformed me? Jaeger quickly replied. They know better, Corporal. Jaeger unveiled a plan that involved us getting rich and escaping this heinous war. After the tavern closes one upcoming night, he wanted to break in and swipe the bracelet for ourselves. We would then head to the depot, dispose of our uniforms, and catch a train to Switzerland. Welch confirmed his uncle owned a large estate near Bern, where we could hide out and sell the bracelet after the war ends. Desertion is punishable by death, Birch stated apprehensively. While we all glanced around the table, gauging each other's reactions to Jaeger's proposal. Only if we get caught, Jaeger confidently replied. Everyone at this table experienced this war's carnage firsthand. We have all sacrificed for the Reich. We're all competent, honorable men that fought alongside each other and deserve better. We would be fools for passing on such a bountiful gain and a chance to emancipate ourselves as pawns at the behest of our superiors. Before Jaeger could continue, Welch asked if it was wise to disclose the pivotal details of the very tavern we intended to raid. Jaeger's response was so cunning, it expunged any doubt I had about his plan going awry. The safest place to plot against your target is right under their noses. When he didn't receive any objections, Jaeger said his contact confirmed the bracelet was hidden within one of the tavern's bedroom walls. Madame Elise was completely unaware of the jewel, or that Monsieur Jean and Fiona were apparently planning on eloping with the bracelet. In addition, Jaeger said he could finalize all the necessary arrangements, such as disguises and transportation to the depot. He demands a cut of the loot for his help, Jaeger said of his contact, so we will have to dispose of him at some point. He's just a peasant. The darkening of Jaeger's face insinuated how serious he was, along with ramifications, should any of us retread. While explaining the final details, a loud, pop-like cracking rang through the tavern, causing everyone to fall silent. We looked toward the bar, just as Madame Elise collapsed in a heap onto the floor, tightly holding the side of her face. Monsieur Jean's large, beefy arm was thrown across his chest, his massive hand outstretched. After striking his wife, he started viciously scolding Madame Elise about her doing what she was told. Schultz and I reacted by shooting up from our seats. However, Jaeger quickly halted us. We need not intervene in local affairs, gentlemen, Jaeger explained calmly. We cannot afford any unwanted attention given our upcoming mission. I knew the sergeant was correct. We watched as Madame Elise struggled back to her feet, keeping her hand firmly pressed over where she was struck as blood seeped from her nose and lips. She fought back tears before fleeing into the kitchen, after which Monsieur Jean stomped into the back room. I fought to contain my escalating anger when I saw Fiona giggling, who was genuinely amused by what just happened. Still wearing that infuriating smirk across her face, she nonchalantly followed Monsieur Jean into the back room. Although the mood was clearly dampened, the tavern's boisterous chatter slowly returned. We all exhibited varying degrees of dismay and disgust after watching a largely burly figure like Monsieur Jean ferociously strike his frail, delicate wife, who was one of the few townspeople that always showed us kindness. I was clearly the most distraught over seeing Monsieur Jean strike his wife, but became content when I thought how especially gratifying it would be to take something so valuable from such a horrid, pompous man. 3 days passed before Jaeger signaled his plan was ready to commence. We were to rendezvous around midnight at an abandoned barn not too far from the tavern. I left the barracks with Birch, who professed his doubts and apprehension about Jaeger's plan, along with the fatal consequences of being caught. While cutting through a patch of dense woods, Birch asked if I trusted him not to speak a word of this to anyone if he returned to the barracks. Upon realizing his intent to retread, I was forced to kill him. I told Birch he was right about having his doubts and gave him my blessing, which was enough to let his guard down. The second he turned his back, I sank the entire blade of my dagger into the back of his skull. I killed many during the war, but Birch was the first time I ever used a knife. The feeling was much more personal and intimate than a gun, which was something I never dwelled on until recently. Killing Birch also meant a bigger cut to the rest of us, which was probably why nobody seemed profoundly impacted when I relayed the news. The others, especially Jaeger, knew it had to be done. Those were the consequences. We stuck to the shadows when making our way to the tavern, which took us longer to reach, but ensured we weren't seen. Upon arriving, Jaeger instructed Schultz and myself to enter through the back, while he and Welch went through the front. As we crept into the back lot, Schultz and I noticed a light and some slight movement coming from the shed. I immediately knew who would be inside at this time of night. We warily approached and peered through one of the shed's windows to see the backside of Monsieur Jean standing awkwardly, hunched over a table, directly above Fiona's sprawled body. Monsieur Jean's pants were at his ankles, and Fiona's bare writhing legs were outstretched. It was obvious what they were doing. The sight of Fiona's slim body was admittedly an arousing and transfixable spectacle, but I managed to pull us away and told Schultz to follow my lead. Withdrawing our pistols, I kicked the shed door open as we stormed inside, demanding Monsieur Jean reveal the bracelet's location. "You waste my time," I barked when Monsieur Jean empathetically denied knowing anything about the bracelet. "We know about the jewel. Need I remind you all arts and riches are property of the Führer? You stand in contempt of those laws by withholding such valuables. Tell us the room where you conceal the treasure, and you will be left unharmed." Outraged at our unprecedented entry, Monsieur Jean became imprudently aggressive. "You break into my home, my business, make false accusations and demands, threats with no attestation," Monsieur Jean barked while frantically pointing at me. His growing anger, disregard for authority, and sense of control Monsieur Jean arrogantly seemed to believe he had, reignited my hatred and boiling fury. In an emblematic gesture, I shifted my gun toward Fiona, and fired a bullet that struck directly between her legs. She released a blood-curdling shriek and recoiled in pain as blood spilled across the table. Monsieur Jean shouted in terror, asking what I had done, and was about to grab Fiona, during which I quickly fired a second shot, striking him in the same intimate area. "You are in no place to lecture us," I said, while slowly walking up to Monsieur Jean, who wailed in agony and struggled to stand his feet, using the table as support. "You don't understand," Monsieur Jean shakily uttered, before finally collapsing. "What I understand is how undeserving you are of your kind, loving spouse, and the pricelessness of that bracelet," I said, while pinning Monsieur Jean's head against the ground with my boot. "Corporal!" Schultz cried out, making me take my eyes off Monsieur Jean, only to see the bloody table strike us with ferocious speed. The impact launched us into the wall and shattered the table. Groggy and dazed from the strike, I looked up to see Fiona's contorting body. Her torso was rapidly bloating, while her face was stretched unnaturally wide, appearing as if it was about to rip apart and form two additional heads. She took deep, grumbly breaths that barely sounded human, and started making stiff, mechanical, stomping steps in our direction. Before I could retreat, Schultz rose to his feet, brandishing a metal pole, and he released a frantic battle cry and blindly charged toward Fiona, who instinctively grabbed the pole when Schultz attempted to swing. Clenching his neck with her other hand, she lifted Schultz's struggling body, her tightened grip crushing his windpipe and reducing Schultz's screams to a faint, hiss-like gargle. Trapped in a fear-induced, paralytic trance, I watched Fiona clench the skin beneath Schultz's chin and slowly peel the layer off his face. Schultz's limbs squirmed and twitched until his entire face was torn off, after which Fiona proceeded to savagely tear off his arms and chunks of torso. I finally managed to utter a "No!" that caused her to drop Schultz's dismembered body. As I raced to my feet, Fiona's morphing head looking upwards and made a twitch-like gesture, which seemed to snap the wooden support beam running across the ceiling in two and bring down the shed's entire roof. While lifting myself from the rubble, I froze upon hearing those deep, growl-like breaths as Fiona, or whatever it was, effortlessly shifted through the fallen debris and exit the dismantled shed. I heard her slowly stomp across the lot, followed by another loud crash from her ripping the tavern's back door off its hinges. I waited for the silence to return before emerging out of the rubble. Despite injuries to my arm, leg and back, something shifting in the debris caught my attention, which I realized was Monsieur Jean. The wooden beam impaled him through his abdomen. Blood splurted from his mouth and smashed nose each time he attempted to exhale. He clearly didn't have much time left, but wanted his last words to be heard. "I loved my wife," Monsieur Jean weakly gasped in between bursts of bloody coughs. "I had no choice but to bind myself to that evil, that incarnation, for my beloved Elise's sake." Monsieur Jean spent his final moments describing the morbid pact he was forced to make. 2 years ago, Madame Elise was severely ill and on the brink of death. The entity first appeared before Monsieur Jean in the form of an elderly man herding a bull and ram while he was walking down a nearby country road one night. After affirming its vile nature, the being said it knew Madame Elise was in grave condition and made a proposition. She would be cured of her illness if Monsieur Jean adhered to the being's will. When he reluctantly agreed, the being made Monsieur Jean swear a blood oath that officially bound him to the entity, who said it would return in a different form. It reappeared at the tavern 30 days after Madame Elise's recovery in the form of a seductive, beautiful young woman. The being said Monsieur Jean willed it to exclusively unleash his bodily fervors. He was forbidden from ever having intercourse with or show his wife any form of affection. Passing it as the waitress we all knew as Fiona, Monsieur Jean catered to the entity's malicious depravity for over 2 years, while being painstakingly forced to neglect his wife. When I asked Monsieur Jean the being's name, he fearfully uttered one word: Asmodee. "You can't imagine my pain, being forced to cast my beloved wife aside. Taking this monster far and away from Elise was the ultimate sacrifice I was willing to make," Monsieur Jean sputtered during his final seconds of life. "But you sabotaged my plan, nullified our pact." I watched the life escape from Monsieur Jean's face as his body went limp. There was no time to reflect on everything he just revealed when a shrill, agonizing shriek came from inside the tavern. I staggered across the lot and entered through the back doorway. The dark corridor led to a private dining room, which was in complete disarray. Among the smashed furniture, shattered glass and porcelain, I noticed chunks of flesh, severed limbs and human entrails strewn across the floor. I spotted shreds of a German uniform, along with a Lance Corporal insignia, which was all I needed to deduce these were Welch's remains. I felt my stomach churn and was about to vomit. When I turned to leave the room, the door I came in from slammed shut, replacing my nausea with panic when it wouldn't open. I turned back, just in time, to see the door leading to the tavern's front door slowly creak open. I cringed as I slowly crept across the room, each of my steps signified by the crunching of glass and porcelain shards across the floor. My limbs were shaking as fast and uncontrollably as my heart's beats. I slowly entered the front room, which was barely illuminated by a pair of overhead lights and a glass lantern on the bar. Almost every table and chair were also overturned or destroyed. I drew up my pistol and torch, pointing both in the same direction, despite my frantically shaking hands. The torch's light revealed a macabre scene. One of the servers' bodies lay slumped in the corner of a narrow, L-shaped staircase leading to the tavern's second floor. A gaping void was where the body's face should be, and her uniform's white button-down shirt was bloodied and littered with deep tears while her entrails were spilled across the staircase's platform. The front room's far side had chunks of flesh, entrails, limbs, and blood smeared across the floor, along with a nude, limbless, and headless torso propped against an overturned table. My heart sank when I shined the torch upon Madame Elise. Her lifeless body was folded backwards like a piece of paper over a smashed table. A massive fist-like chunk of her throat was ripped out, leaving her head barely attached to her body by a slim strip of skin. Her entire forehead was smashed in, and pieces of her ribs and spine were pierced through her skin around the crease of her backwardly bent torso. I could still make out the welt on her face from where she was struck by Monsieur Jean, who I now know was trying to protect his wife. As I started walking up to Madame Elise's body, a creaking noise coming from the bar's opposite end made me quickly show my torch in that direction, where I glanced upon Jaeger's motionless body that protruded out from behind the bar. He lay next to the kitchen doorway, along with a pair of legs from what I thought was another corpse, but realized they belonged to Jaeger, whose body was ripped in half. Between my smothering lightheadedness, rapidly beating heart, and violently churning stomach, I was on the brink of succumbing to the unfathomable surroundings, when I noticed something glimmer in Jaeger's hand. The bracelet. I cautiously retrieved the jewel from Jaeger's rigid grip and thoroughly inspected it with my torch. Aside from the blood coating its surface, the bracelet was smooth, flawless, and lined with a half dozen diamonds that were at least 3 carats. The bracelet had a small engraving that read Capet, 1752, with the family's signature insignia of a shield with 3 fleurs. The bracelet was undoubtedly genuine, which made me forget where I was for a brief second. While enamored with a priceless jewel, the kitchen door slowly opened. Those deep, grumbly breaths broke the timid silence. Looking up, I stumbled backwards and fell to the floor as my widened, terror-filled eyes comprehended the fearsome entity towering over me. I saw Asmodee in its true form. The nude being stood nearly 7 feet tall and had a bloated, chunky torso of blotchy, pale, reddish-peach skin. His chunky neck supported 3 conjoined, skinless faces, one of a ram, the swollen face of a man, and a bull, all containing blank, glazed expressions in their black, beady eyes. The demon stood on 2 slim, bird-like legs with thick, sharp talons and filled the room with a piercing odor of decay and sulfur. Unable to take my eyes off the being, I watched it curiously cant its head while I was observed by its 3 contorted faces. It stepped up alongside Jaeger's body and released a deep, scraping hiss before glancing down at its upper half. The demon lifted and turned Jaeger's torso so his limp, dangling head faced my direction. It then slowly sank and wiggled its claw-tipped appendages into Jaeger's back, causing his body to convulse before he sprang back to life. I nearly lost consciousness from the utter abhorrence and astonishment as Jaeger released a raspy groan, his unnaturally widened eyes staring directly at me. "It hurts," Jaeger croakily gasped, his words coated in pure excruciation that sent a sharp, debilitating chill down my spine, as the sounds of squishy crunching from the entity's twisting fingers digging deeper into Jaeger's backside filled my ears. "Make it stop. Make it stop." Jaeger's words quickly transitioned into a constant, elongated moan that escalated into a sharp, agonizing scream. The vehemently harrowing suffering in Jaeger's voice and face broke me out of the entity's mesmerizing hold over me. I blindly aimed my pistol and aimed at the clip, hoping to end Jaeger's suffering. I hit Jaeger several times, who was unaffected and continued his heightened screams. One of my rounds ricocheted and struck the gas lantern on the bar, which instantly ignited that side of the tavern. In response to my shots, Asmodee grabbed the top of Jaeger's head with its spare hand, tearing off and crushing his entire forehead like a crumpled piece of paper. Jaeger's screams persisted until the being pulled its fingers from Jaeger's back, in which the life once again vacated his body. As the fire spread, I tried crawling across the front room, but heard the demon quickly close in on me with his thumping steps. The being lifted me off the ground and turned my body so my face was mere inches from its three. The abomination uttered three words: "Sanguinum tempus veniet," in a sunken, gravelly voice, before flinging me through the back room door. The impact dazed and made me too disoriented to move. My blurry vision faded in and out as the fire's glow intensified, making me certain I would burn to death. Right when the flames became visible from where I lay, I heard voices speaking in German and saw three blurry figures burst into the tavern. They were German soldiers that raced over after hearing the commotion and dragged me out in time. When questioned about what happened that night, I claimed to barely remember anything, but stated we were ambushed by resistance fighters. The war didn't last long for me after I recovered from my injuries. I was placed in a new regiment, but was captured by Allied troops shortly afterwards and put in a POW camp. For me, this was both a blessing and a curse. While I was no longer on the front lines, I fought my own internal battles with the scarring memories of that fateful night. I now know the reality of what evils exist in this world. Evils that exploit the weak and vulnerable in ways far worse than anything we as humans can comprehend. I don't know if I'll ever again encounter Asmodee. Perhaps I won't, if it knows the torment I continuously suffer after that night's memories, which are forever embedded in my mind. My grandfather drew detailed sketches of the demonic entity and bracelet in the journal, which were as chilling as they were captivating. When I went to show my mother the memoir's translated excerpt, she happened to be going through the contents inside my grandfather's safety deposit box. "I think you'd like this," my mother excitedly told me before I could say anything, and handed me a worn manila envelope. There was no mention of it in the will or anywhere else, but it seems like something of your grandfather's that you would cherish. A sharp chill ran down my spine when I opened the envelope and immediately recognized the item inside. The bracelet, the very one described in my grandfather's memoir.
Darf's etwas mehr Blick sein? Für dich und alle Freunde. Und eine eigene Strandvilla.
Jetzt im Eurojackpot. Rund 40 Millionen Euro. Das Leben könnte so Jackpot sein. Mit Eurojackpot. In jeder Lottoannahmestelle und auf lottobayern.de. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Chance auf den Höchstgewinn 1 zu 140 Millionen. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
Wünschst du dir jemanden, der dich versteht wie kein anderer? Jemand, der deine Wünsche wahr werden lässt und mit dir das schönste Abenteuer deines Lebens erleben möchte? Die Commerce-Plattform Shopify revolutioniert Millionen von Unternehmen weltweit. Mit Shopify richtest du im Nu deinen Online-Shop ein. Ganz ohne Programmier- oder Designkenntnisse. Dank der effizienten Einrichtung und intuitiven Social-Media- und Online-Marketplace-Integration kannst du über Instagram, eBay und Co. werben und verkaufen. Neue Zielgruppen zu erreichen war noch nie so einfach. Shopify bietet auf einer einzigen sicheren Plattform alle Tools, um dein Online-Business aufzubauen. Kostenlos testen und dein Business der Welt präsentieren. Shopify.de/try besuchen. Einfach shopify.de/try eingeben und loslegen. Made for Germany. Powered by Shopify.